All right, here we go on a Wednesday. It's Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tapp, Drew Nixon with you. Coming up in a half hour, our Odyssey NFL insider Ross Tucker going to join us, get his perspective on the Chiefs' first loss of the season and looking ahead a little bit. You know, I know he, of course, has an offensive lineman perspective. We've relied on him a lot the last couple of weeks to give us his opinion on how the left tackle position is working out. Last week, he talked about Donovan Smith. So we'll probably discuss that a little bit, but also just want to talk about the AFC picture as it stands, including tomorrow night. There is Thursday Night Football.
Now, I know, but it's Browns.
It's Browns Steelers, but the Steelers only like 3-point favorites in that game. It's on the road. Could that be one of those AFC North, like the Steelers have no business losing that game kind of thing, but all of a sudden it makes things interesting because the Steelers are just in the middle of a tough stretch and that's when they slip up and would not be the first time a team had a big win against the Ravens, let's just say, which is what it was last week. And then they slip up against a team they should definitely not lose to, the Browns. So we'll get into that also a little bit later on today. Andy Reid, Patrick Mahomes coming up at 11:45 right here on your home for the Chiefs, 96.5 The Fan. Sounds like your morning went a lot better today than it did yesterday.
I did not get in a car accident on the way to work.
That's good.
A win.
Yeah.
I mean, not much of a, I mean, a bigger win, I guess, than that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, nobody else did, right? We're all good.
No.
Everyone made it into work safely. I just like, and now you just live in the limbo of like, well, I'd like to hear from the insurance company today.
It'll take time. It'll get sorted out. It'll take time.
I don't like it to take time. I'm impatient when it comes to that. I think you're impatient about, it's like the unknown, but in a way worse thing because it's your car. You're like, come on, man. At least it's drivable. Like I drove it again today. Like it moves. I didn't have to just like figure out something in the meantime, borrow a car, a million other things while they work through the claim process. But yeah, my morning is better. I hope your morning was good as well.
Yeah, it was. Shout out to everybody out there. We appreciate you guys hanging out with us as always on the Jay Southland Tow Service. Text line 913-586-7965 is how you can interact with us throughout the day, both text and on the phone. I want to start with the AFC West, not the AFC, but the AFC West, because admittedly, I don't think anybody thought we'd be sitting here with the Chargers sitting at 7-3 on November 20th. I don't think the Broncos, even at 6-5, was something we'd be saying on November the 20th. The Raiders, 2-8.
That one I saw coming.
And if it weren't for the Raiders, I think you could easily say this is the best division in football. The Raiders are the only thing bringing it down to where I still look at the NFC North and view that a little more favorably. Otherwise, you can make a case that this is the toughest division in football, which will make what will inevitably be, what, 9 straight division titles in a row here pretty soon for the Chiefs that much more impressive.
Now, they only have a 2-game lead on the division, I'll say, which means in 3 weeks when these two teams face each other, you could make an argument that, like, well, they could make it interesting, right? Like the what was it like a couple of years ago when the Raiders made it interesting for a moment because they won a game that put the Raiders within a game of the division? Now, I remind you, the Chiefs ended up winning the division that year by like 4 games still, even though in like November they made it a little interesting. I just don't think the Chargers are good enough, just like I didn't think that Raiders team was good enough to make enough of a swing to make that difference. I actually think this is the best division in football. So let's just call the Chiefs and the Lions a wash.
Okay.
Straight up wash. Seems fair, right? That's the best team in the NFC. This is the best team in the AFC. If we pulled up 75 random power rankings or asked Ross Tucker his, they'd be 1-2. So let's just call them a wash, the Chiefs and the Lions. Cool. So then the remaining teams are, I get it, the Raiders are the worst of those teams. They're worse than the Bears. But let's admit what they both are. Dysfunctional, who can't be good teams. So they kind of fall into a similar category, even though I think the Bears are a better team than them, but they are massively underperforming and neither of them have a good head coach, which means I think a lot of times they're not going to win the games. They're going to, you know, like they could surprise teams in. So it leaves me with really the Chargers and the Broncos versus the middle teams of the AFC North. Sam Darnold and the Vikings are a team that I just simply do not take seriously. And I know that that seems harsh, because they have won their games and they deserve to be credit for their 8-2. It's Sam Darnold. Like, I think they're the best coached, maybe, of those ones. Like, maybe him and Harbaugh, O'Connor and Harbaugh, are like a wash at coaches. But if you're going to make me choose the 7-3 Chargers with Justin Herbert and Harbaugh, or the 8-2 Vikings with Kevin O'Connor, who I think is one of the best coaches in the league, Sam Darnold, dude, I'm taking the Chargers as the better team. So, like, I think when you start negating these things,
I don't know.
Maybe they're equally as good. I think the Chiefs are playing in the best division in football.
So I still give the edge slightly to the NFC North because you're right. The Chiefs and Lions, we can kind of call a wash, but in a lot of people's eyes right now, as it sits this point, the Lions have been the best team in football for the last couple of weeks. I think it's been pretty clear, even though the Chiefs were the undefeated team in football until this past Sunday. I think the Lions, if we just watch them, I kind of described it as, of course, come playoff time, you want to peak then, not now. I view the Lions, they're playing their peak football already.
They're playing great. They might continue to play.
I view them just slightly above in that regard. And then the Vikings, I get the name thing. That's what it is. It's like you're saying Sam Darnold out loud, and you're like,
pass the smell test?
I understand it, and I think Harbaugh's a great coach. I also think Kevin O'Connell is one of the best coaches in the NFL, and certainly they have more playmakers on offense than the Chargers do. The Chargers just defensively are one of the best in football, but let's not forget Brian Flores has that Vikings defense playing at a very, very high level. I think those are much closer. I would actually give a little bit of the edge to the Vikings. I think the Vikings questions are more because the last 2 weeks or so, Sam Darnold has come back down to earth. He was legitimately in the MVP conversation for 6 weeks of the season, and now that's obviously out the window. He even in the win against the Jags a couple weeks ago, they scored 12 points, and so I think people are like, okay, here they're coming back down to earth. And people were burned by the Vikings in what was it, 2022, when the Vikings
13-3,
yeah, whatever.
I think so.
And they were out right away. So I think that's some of the thinking as far as like comparing Packers, Broncos. I'll still, despite the Bo Nix love that we gave yesterday, and he's playing really well,
that's where the Packers get the edge.
I'll still take Jordan Love, and at this point in their careers, I'll take Matt LaFleur still over Sean Payton, despite historically Payton, of course, has had the better career because he's been around and has a ring. And then I do think there is a gap between the Bears and Raiders more than you do, maybe.
Honestly, that's the worst thing for this argument, is the gap between the seller of this division is pretty significant, probably, because, yeah, the Bears are a competitive, sometimes win football team with the number one overall pick in last year's draft, who's actually had a couple of good weeks in a row. And the other one is the one of the five worst teams in the league. What do the Raiders rank? Do you think one of the five worst teams in the league?
Yeah, they're, to me, the Giants and the Raiders might be the two worst football teams. I know Jacksonville, somebody would say, but I think the Giants and the Raiders would give the nod over the Bears, over the Jets, even though we'll talk about the Jets' dysfunction, they're still better than the Raiders or Broncos.
I guess this the Raiders. Like, this goes back to the same problem that the division had last year. Chiefs won 11 games last year. They had a million different problems, still couldn't beat them in the division. This year, there's still people out there being like, well, the Chiefs lost their number one, number two wide receivers, number two corner, number two defensive. Like, they've had massive issues from an injury front. And you're still down two games in the division? And you're good now. Like, what the hell? When are the Chiefs losing this division becomes a very real question for me at times, because the Chiefs are continuously having problems over the last couple of years, and you still aren't going to take it from them. So let's just say 2 years from now.
Next year, you'll have a ton of people. Yeah. You're going to have a ton of people next year picking the Chargers to win the division.
So let's say next year, right? Harbaugh's got this thing humming, right? He's got Harbaugh. He's got Herbert. He's finally got some weapons for Herbert versus this year where they're relying on a rookie wide receiver being their best guy, and they got things cooking. Well, by then, I don't think the Chiefs are going to be, I don't know, without a million different players due to injury. That's just a year-by-year luck thing. So I'm going to assume, just based on law of averages, next year they won't have as many injury problems as they have this year. So you're going to get them then? Okay. Good luck. Every year what's funny is, like, even if the division gets better, which it is better this year than last year. Last year, hard to remember, Chargers picked in the top 10. They were a 5-win football team.
They got Joel.
The Raiders were around 500, but they were a fraud. The Broncos were around 500, but they stunk. Like, the division was straight up not very good last year. This is a much better division this year that the Chiefs are playing in.
Do we agree that the Chargers are that team? Or is it potentially the Broncos, who could be, like, I don't think it's next year, but in 2 years or 3 years, is it the Chargers definitively?
Chargers
or
are best position, in my opinion.
Yeah. Oh, you said over the next 3 years?
Or the Broncos, because I don't think Chargers. The Raiders are doing it.
Chargers. Mm. It's the Chargers. Right now, if you said the next 3 years, who's the better quarterback, Herbert or Bo Nix, the answer is Herbert. And if you said next 3 years, who's the better coach, Harbaugh or Peyton, for me, it's Harbaugh. So, like, if I just simply boiled it down to that, I also think the Chargers are a year ahead on their rebuild. The Broncos are kind of stuck in no man's land where they still have some expensive players left over from the we went all in Russell Wilson era, versus the Chargers have started to flip over some of their aging roster. So they would seem better positioned to capitalize off of that, I would say. Like, the Broncos are going to have to make a decision on whether to pay Cortland Sutton or to start over at wide receiver again. Like, they, you know, like, they're not even in, like, a good position in that regard.
Next year, the Chargers have the seventh most cap space on
that helps.
On paper. The Raiders have the third most. The Broncos would have the 12th most. So the Chargers are positioned better financially heading into the future, just from a cap perspective, at least. As they did, they kind of broke that roster down, and that's why it's impressive what they are doing at this point in time. And that's why we had a conversation last week that the AFC West might end up getting three teams in the postseason. Right now, there would be three teams. If the postseason began this weekend, you would have the Chargers, Broncos, and Chiefs all in the AFC playoff picture. We'll get back to the NFL with Ross Tucker coming up in 20 minutes. We'll also talk about maybe a better feeling long-term at a certain position with the Chiefs based on what we saw over the last month or so from a certain player. But let's talk some Royals briefly, because there's starting to be a little more noise. We're with 2.5 weeks or so from the winter meetings taking place. And a week ago, a lot of the noise was whether or not the Royals were interested in a player that the Phillies put on the trade block. And that, is, of course, is Alec Bohm, someone that I think you and I both are excited to hear mention. Also has ties to Aaron, went to Wichita State. So he's a Midwest guy as well. I think last year was his first All-Star appearance. There's your leadoff hitter. There's your third baseman. Very intrigued by Alec Bohm. The name over the weekend that got some attention with some reporting, including from Andy Rogers over at MLB.com, is that the Royals did indeed speak with the Cincinnati Reds about, no, not Elly De La Cruz, Cody's. Don't get excited.
Damn it.
No, it was not him.
Man, that would have been incredible.
Jonathan India. And he would probably...
the two most athletic players in the league.
Jonathan India would probably also be the fit for your leadoff hitter. He's a second baseman. I don't know. Can he play other spots? Because right now you might be saying, okay, do they need a second baseman? They got Michael Massey. I don't know if India could play another spot. I don't know if this is, hey, they don't trust the back of Michael Massey. I don't know what it would be. It certainly would be an upgrade at the leadoff spot for this team.
Yeah.
The name on the surface, I'll be honest. Just if you just tell me Royals interested in Jonathan India, my first reaction is, eh. You know, like, it's like, oh, okay. I get why they're interested, but like Alec Bohm excites, like that name, that excites me. Jonathan India, I'm like, okay.
Jonathan India is a 27-year-old light power infielder. It kind of feels like a Royals move circa 2011, circa 2017, where you're like, I'm not here to tell you that Jonathan India is a bad baseball player.
No.
That is an inaccurate description of his play. But I'm with you. Does it, like, do I jump off the page and I'm like, yes, get me Jonathan India? And I'm like, no. But then I realized what the very simple reality is on these moves. Like when it's Alec Bohm and when it's Jonathan India and some of the names that have been floating around here, there's really two realizations I've come to. One is they want a leadoff hitter, but they're not trying to like get the leadoff hitter of your dreams, okay? They're not trying to hit a 10 out of 10 here. Jonathan India would have been second on this team in on-base percentage last year. His career worst on-base percentage would have ranked fifth on this team last year. And so when I start looking at it that way, what I'm realizing is they want one person who will get on base in front of Bobby Wood Jr. And Jonathan India would have gotten on base in front of Bobby Wood Jr. better than anyone else on this team last year. And that's why they want him. Alec Bohm would have gotten on base
80 walks
better than anyone else on this team. 80 walks
for India, not for Bohm.
Bobby Wood Jr. led this team in walks last year with 54. He would have destroyed the career or the high water walk percentage on this team. By 30 walks, he would have been better than Bobby Wood Jr. By the way, I don't need to tell you what it was like after that, because it was worse. Now, if Vinny Pasquantino had played the entire year, he'd have probably been in that similar range, because Vinny just puts the ball in play. He's not a high, high walk guy necessarily. I think he might turn into that as time goes on, but he doesn't strike out. Vinny puts the ball in play, and that's what I think. I think they want an on-base guy, but the problem is, Jonathan India has played zero career games at third base. Michael Massey has played one career game at first base with three career at-bats. So if you were going after India, you were telling me you're done with Michael Massey. And I'd rather just play out that string. That's why Bohm at third base makes way more sense to me.
Unless there's more concern about the back, which we know for Massey.
He managed it pretty well last year, I thought.
He did, but they've all acknowledged it's something that is going to be the case the rest of his career, right? And so is that part of the thinking? Also, let's just be real about the compensation. What's the difference in compensation it would take to get Alec Bohm versus Jonathan India? We know the Royals are not the only team that would be interested in Alec Bohm or Jonathan India for that matter, but you wonder if one trade is more realistic to pull off. I love the fact that we're hearing before the winter meetings, too, 2 weeks before the winter meetings, that they're involved, right? They are having conversations with some of these players. You know, last year was a different type of offseason. They overhauled most of the roster, so many new pieces on opening day. That's not the case this offseason. We know that. That's not the goal of this offseason. They're coming off a playoff appearance. Now it's finding those spots, to one or two spots to fix, to fill.
A little bit better.
And that's it. And a leadoff hitter would be that. Would it be an upgrade at second base? I'm not entirely sure. Certainly with the on-base percentage, it would be. Third base is just the area that I think we all would like them to improve more. But they're also, according to Andy Rogers, they've also shown interest in Taylor Ward. So that's Taylor Ward, that's Alec Bohm, and Jonathan India that the Royals, I don't know if it's fair to use the word, are linked to. They certainly are having discussions
have
about.
Have had conversations. And reportedly, the teams are calling on all the names you'd think. Singer, Marsh, Bubich, and Michael Garcia. Yeah. I mean, I could have done that list blindfolded without even having seen that report. But I have come to one decision. I think one of the two, either Michael Garcia or Brady Singer, will not be on the opening day roster in 2025.
Well, if you think they're getting any of the three names we mentioned, then I almost think that has to happen, right? There's no way I can imagine.
Those feel like exchange players for that player.
Do you see a world in which the Royals acquire Alec Bohm or Jonathan India without giving up either Garcia or Singer?
Depends on where those teams are. Obviously, some teams prefer prospects depending on their rebuild.
Right.
Reds have been semi-competitive, so my guess is, yeah, probably that's some of the players that are being dismissed. And I also think the Royals, in a weird way, have better depth at the back end of the major league roster than they have in the minors right now. They actually have more trade assets in the Marsh, Lynch, Bubich, Singer, Michael thing than if you start looking at double and triple A and single A. So, I kind of think those do become players they look to trade for the same reason you just mentioned. I think that it just kind of makes sense that way, yeah. Do you think both are on the roster? If I said it's April 1st, 2025, are both Michael Garcia and Brady Singer on the roster?
I would say if the Royals accomplish what I think they want to accomplish this offseason, and that is finding a leadoff hitter or finding a corner outfielder, then the answer is no. Like, to me, if they're on the roster, it means they weren't able to complete what they wanted to actually accomplish. We know all the time, like, it doesn't mean that they don't have the right thought process. These names clearly are going after the area we all thought they were going to try to improve the roster. Doesn't mean they're going to actually be able to successfully pull off a trade. But to me, if they're going to address what they said they want to address in any of the three names we just mentioned to go acquire, I don't know how you pull off one of those moves without it involving one of them not being on the team. I told you, I think you agreed, when they brought back Michael Wacha on a three-year deal, potentially four with the club option, that allowed them to have flexibility if it takes a trade that involves Brady Singer. Whereas if Michael Wacha was not back, then I don't think Brady Singer would be involved in these discussions.
Well, this is like deep, deep Royals talk. But the moves that they made yesterday actually indicate that part of their solution for their bullpen stuff
adding
is
Noah Camara
in-house.
And stuff, yeah.
Like, some of the people they added tells you that part of their solution for the bullpen. Here's the truth is, their single biggest problem is getting on base. They were the third worst team in walks last year. They're terrible at it. And here's what's worse. Regression is likely. Do I think Salvador Perez will set a new career high in walks next year? He had a great year. Like, he can still have another great year. Doesn't mean I think he's going to set another career high in walks, and that's just who he is now. So, like, they're likely to hypothetically regress in that department, other than the fact that if Vinny plays the entire year again, they'll get more walks. But the third worst team in walks, with Bobby Witt Jr. and Vinny Pasquantino and Salvador Perez, if you just put more people on base in front of them, how much more better would you have been as an offense with a guy like Jonathan India walking one extra time every two games in front of those players? And the answer is quite a bit better, probably. And so, like, yes, leadoff hitter is just like the one area I don't think they can afford to ignore. Like, I don't think that I just think they can't ignore it.
Yeah, it's not the offensive regression. I think it's just the pitching staff regression. Just the natural, like, as great as everybody was. I mean, there's a very good chance that Seth Lugo regresses. And by the way, when I use the word regression, it doesn't mean he's going to be terrible. But it's reasonable to believe that there's some regression coming for Seth Lugo this year. It's reasonable to believe that that might happen for even Michael Wacha, who's been so consistent. So if that happens, okay, they're not bad. You also might have an injury that happens. So how do you improve on that? Either A, you have another pitcher that's in the organization, or then your offense just needs to be better next year to cover for that. If your pitching is not as dominant, your offense needs to elevate. And how do you do that? Finding a legit leadoff hitter is one way to do that, and that's why we know these names are being discussed for the Royals to potentially go out and get. So that's just a little bit on the Royals front. Interesting to hear those names. I love the fact that they're involved in these names, though.
I like how active it sounds like they're being in these conversations. Maybe we'll get JJ on here sometime in the next couple of weeks, get an idea of where they stand here on the process.
Coming up in 10 minutes, we'll talk with Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL insider, about the Chiefs' first loss of the year, how they're progressing this week with getting perhaps some other guys back in the mix. We all know the practice window's been open up for Minshew and Isaiah Pacheco. And does he buy into the fact that maybe teams, or in this case the Chiefs, you hold something back in a matchup against Buffalo, whether it's D-Hop, snap count, or whatever? So we'll do that in a little bit. But I think the last couple weeks at the tight end position, it's been interesting to watch for the Chiefs, because if you were paying attention the last few weeks prior to Sunday, you know that Travis Kelce's target share was way, way up, and he was looking like his old self. And then I saw some selective stat poachers, I'll call them, yesterday saying, well, Travis Kelce's now pacing for his lowest and all this. Like, where were you 2 weeks ago when he was
3 weeks when he had like 10 catches and 100 yards three consecutive weeks?
So it was convenient, kind of funny to me that people were throwing out Kelce's stats after he, of course, didn't really do anything statistically on Sunday. But you know who did? Of course, that was Noah Gray.
I think Noah Gray has already proven to me with his play on the field, they got a league average tight end when he's the starter. This is great news for them. It is going to take a second, or it's going to be kind of a huge pain in the ass, as you know, to find a replacement for Travis Kelce. Turns out the Chiefs are the only team in league history, seemingly, who can have two of the three greatest tight ends in NFL history just with their franchise. Everyone else is out here slumming it with the rest of the Dallas Goddards of the world, and they have to just like figure out how to make it work. I think they're already there. I think Noah Gray has proven to me that he can be the 11th best, 10th best, 9th best, whatever, tight end in the NFL. If he was a full-time starter at tight end, they have a viable NFL tight end that most teams would be accepting of in their roster. That's great news if you're Kansas City, because that transition to Travis Kelce was going to be tough no matter what. This softens the blow a little.
Yeah, long-term, we know they got a contract done with Noah Gray before the season. I think it surprised some people at the time of the deal. But if you're saying when this is all said and done, whether it's next year or 2 years from now, and he has to be the guy, and I'm sure there'll be somebody else in the picture, who knows what long-term Jared Wiley is going to be. Unfortunately, we know he's done for the season with his injury, and so he never progressed his rookie year the way some people thought he could. But if we're just basing it off of yardage, can he be a 10th best tight end
in football? Which is 700 yards?
Right now, as it sits, Dallas Goedert is who you reference, and he's in Philly. He's got 387 yards. That's
perfect example.
Yardage-wise, 10th best this year. Mike Gesicki there in Cincy is the 11th best at 383. Mark Andrews in Baltimore, 379. Andrews, of course, towards the tail end of his career. But if you want to put the targets and everything in perspective, right now with 26 targets in 23 catches, Noah Gray is 28th out of tight ends in yardage, 249. But remember, 26 targets. All of a sudden, you start looking at a Mike Gesicki who has 47 targets. He has 34 catches. So, and that puts him 11th just in terms of yardage. So if you want to extrapolate it out, you could say that Noah Gray would be pacing to be a top 10 tight end if he had the same amount of targets, I think, as a Gesicki or Dallas Goedert.
So last year, I looked it up, just like where he'd rank. Do you think that if Noah Gray was the full-time starter and there was no Travis Kelce on this roster, do you think he could have 800 yards receiving? Does that seem like...
I don't know about this year and the way this offense is going,
next year. Do you think that Noah Gray is capable of 800 yards receiving next season if Travis Kelce retires? And if you do, then he would have the 8th most receiving yardage last year. Think about the players who you think are really good NFL tight ends. Trey McBride, who's had a great season for Arizona. He had 825 yards last year. David Njoku, 882. Sam Laporta, 889. Even like the 700-yard guys, that's pretty much the cutoff. Dalton Kincaid and Cole Kmet had 673 and 719. He is a top 10 tight end immediately by becoming a 700-yard receiver for his team, which I think he is more than capable of right now if they just gave him the targets. Because what's he going to finish with this year? I don't know his pacing stats. How many yards does he have right now?
Like 249 or something.
249?
Yeah, 26. What'd I say? 26 targets, 23 catches, something like that.
249 divided by, they played 11 games, right? Let's see. He is on pace for, as it sits right now, 384 yards. So a little bit short of that, certainly. That would put him in the 28th range last year.
That's where he's at right
or
now.
So.
So
oh, makes sense. Wow, almost dead on.
Yeah.
But I mean, if you just think he gets a 20%, 30% increase in production, he's the 13th, 14th best tight end. They already have a league average tight end is what I'm telling
you. Maybe this is why they got that contract done before the season, because yeah, it's going to end up looking pretty good. If in fact, it depends also, is Kelce playing next year or is he retiring? And that'll change the entire conversation about what's expected out of him. Up next, though, let's talk some more Chiefs and the NFL as a whole with Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL insider. We'll ask him maybe about the tight end future, plus what he sees the Chiefs need to do the next couple of weeks to get back on track. Back here on Cody and Gold, Alex Gold, Cody Tap, Drew Nixon with you coming up in 15 minutes. We'll get to a tweet that had people excited about one Chiefs possible return. I would say to the lineup, but I mean, we haven't even seen him play this year, and except for a preseason game. But we'll get to that coming up in 15 minutes or so. But it's time to head out to the phones and welcome in our Odyssey NFL insider, Ross Tucker. Of course, insider calls brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. You can purchase Hellman's at your local Walmart or grocery store to add extra deliciousness and creamy flavor to your game day dishes this football season. Ross, you were a little maction last night, huh? Kent State looked like?
Yeah, man, I'm a sicko, dude. Sunday I did Raiders, Dolphins. This Sunday I have Titans, Texans for CBS, but they asked if I wanted to do maction last night. Or maybe you could say no. Of course I want to do maction. So drove to Cleveland, and then last night I drove, I don't know, 4.5 hours back, got home at like 3:30 in the morning. Ooh. Yep. I don't mess around, boys.
One of our coworkers we describe exactly this way. His name is Jay Binkley. And we used to describe it like in April, he'd probably be like scratching so bad, he'd be like looking for like back alley, you know, backyard football games. Needs football so bad, he's been searching for it even in the off season.
You know what's interesting? I love football. And during football season, I'll watch any like high school, college, NFL. I will call any game, but I do like having my weekends off and, you know, having that free time in the off season. Like, I don't get into the XFL, you know what I mean? Like, or UFL or whatever it's called. Sure. Now. Like, I don't really watch that because those are the only weekends I can actually be with my family. I mean, this is, you know, again, I'll fly to Houston tomorrow, just so people know. I don't know if they know how it works, but I'll fly to Houston tomorrow afternoon, Friday morning, go to the Texans facility, watch them practice, meet with players and coaches. Saturday, go to the hotel to meet with the Titans. Sunday's the game. So point being, I'm away from my family like every weekend. So in the off season, you know, after the Super Bowl till August, like I am fully taking advantage of those weekends and not, as much as I love football, I'm not watching the UFL.
I totally get it. Now, watching the Chiefs and Bills, was it just reinforcing what we already knew some of the weaknesses were for the Chiefs, or was there something that maybe concerned you more?
I don't know. It's so crazy the way they were able to win it last year when nobody thought they were gonna, that if this was like any other team, we would talk about their offensive issues. We would talk about how even, you know, with Spags' defense, the Bills are able to put more points up, and you'd be concerned. And I think that's probably why nobody's ever won three in a row before. It's because not that the Chiefs are getting complacent in any way, but it's almost like we are. You know, it's like we should be saying they need to be better than this. They need to do this better. But my overarching takeaway from the game is just that, to me, I feel like it makes it more likely the Chiefs will win when they play against each other in the playoffs. I think it's really hard for either one of them to beat the other one twice. And I think it's more significant that it could impact home field advantage than it is that, you know, the Chiefs lost the game.
I don't think that teams just like stash things forever or whatever, Ross, but like I watch the Chiefs all year, so I got a better viewpoint, I guess, from like other people typically. That was in my opinion, a really vanilla version of their offense. Is that what you saw out of the Chiefs?
It's hard to say. I mean, I feel like it's been vanilla in a lot of games this year. I feel like they've not been kind of what we thought they would be. And maybe some of that's Hollywood Brown and Rashee Rice and whatever. It's actually remarkable that they've done as much winning as they have without those guys. They clearly, I think, were trying to get the ball to Xavier Worthy early in the game, and it kind of worked until it didn't. I don't know. I do not think that they held stuff back for a rematch. I mean, maybe a little bit, but the way I describe it is, think about like a chessboard, right? You know, if you've ever like talked to anybody that plays high-level chess, they'll tell you if any one piece on the board is different, it kind of changes the whole thing. It changes your potential moves. It changes strategies. Like one piece, you know, being on or off the board, that's the way I feel like football is. So I think it would be somewhat silly to reserve things for, number one, a rematch that might not happen. And number two, you know, both teams are going to have different pieces on and off their board if they play against each other in January. Right? Like the Bills will probably have Kincaid back and Keon Coleman. So that changes what Spags will do. You know, that goes both ways. So I think you can, I don't think it's smart to try to hold things for the next matchup when strategy and game planning is going to be a decent amount different based on who is and is not available on the chessboard for that next game.
Because we all agree it's not the Chiefs because they've got too much, like, long history of winning to do it. Who is the team in your mind that has way more wins than you think they should? Like, who is the fraudulent 7-win team or fraudulent 8-win team? Who in your mind is weaker than their actual record?
Probably the Steelers. Yeah. I mean, I think the Steelers are pretty good. I don't think they're 8-2 good. I have to go back and think about their games, but just thinking about the last few weeks, the win over the Ravens by 2 points, the win over the Commanders by 1 point, it kind of feels like the Steelers, for whatever reason, are winning more than their fair share of one-score games. And I'm not sure they're really, you know, they're really that good. You know, I think they're pretty good, but I don't think they're, oh, my gosh, 8-2. You know, it's funny because last week you guys were asking me about them, and so was the folks in Buffalo as, like, a real threat. I just can't – they're not winning 3 or 4 playoff games like that. You know, I just don't believe that. Maybe one, but I don't think 3 or 4.
We're talking to Ross Tucker, Odyssey NFL insider here on 96.5 The Fan. Kind of on the same lines, but looking at maybe a team that is better than we all thought they would be and now maybe needs more attention. Where do you stand with the Chargers right now after what they were able to do Sunday Night Football? Of course, they almost blew. Well, they did blow the lead, and they were able to salvage it against Cincinnati. And now this is an AFC West that could have, and if it ended this weekend, would have 3 playoff teams.
Yeah, that's kind of wild, isn't it? I would say that the Chargers, they got a shot because they've got a quarterback that can go toe-to-toe with, you know, they got a quarterback that can go toe-to-toe with these other guys. Now, again, I don't know that Herbert can do that 3 or 4 games in a row. He hasn't really shown that. But certainly, I would not be surprised if the Chargers could beat a Ravens team or a Bills team or a Chiefs team in a playoff game. I'm not ready to think that they could do it 3 or 4 times in a row, but I do think that they can do it. I do think they can do it in a one-game situation. And I'm really looking forward to the Harbaugh Monday night.
Yeah.
But those are two teams that I think are good enough to do it. I think they're good enough to make a run at this thing. I mean, if you look at it, Chiefs, Bills, Steelers. I'm not sure I'm there on the Texans. I think that I'll feel differently about them maybe after I see them up close on Sunday and after they get Will Anderson back. But even with the Broncos and how they looked against the Falcons, right now, all seven of the projected playoff teams, the AFC guys, they feel like they're good enough where they could win a playoff game. A lot of times, like, the worst division winner and one of the wild cards at least, you're like, yeah, they're not winning the playoff game, right? Whereas, I don't know, I kind of feel like in the AFC, I could see, I don't think that, like, the Texans and the Broncos are on the Chiefs and Bills level, but I wouldn't be surprised if they won a playoff game.
When you look at what the bad teams in the league are doing, I always kind of like your perspective. What would you do if you're the Cowboys? Just tear down, try to trade Dak. What would you do, Ross?
Well, I mean, that's a longer conversation. The first thing I would do is stop having the octogenarian owner talking to the media. Would probably be number one. Number two, I'd probably hire and empower a real GM, and I would change my entire strategy as it comes to contracts. And then I would not tear it all down. I think that they have some really, I mean, a lot of teams, at least 20 off the top of my head, would take starting place of Dak Prescott, CeeDee Lamb, and Micah Parsons. To have three elite players at three, arguably the three most important positions, I don't think that's a full teardown.
Okay. I mean, look, I think the Jets is. I just didn't know what you do with the Cowboys. Jets you tear down, right? We at least agree there?
1,000%, yeah. I mean, and that's another one where, I mean, with all these reports coming out, ownership is a problem for the Jets. Has been a problem for the Jets, and sounds like it'll continue to be a problem, although it seemed like it maybe was a little bit better when Woody Johnson was like an ambassador right. Or whatever he was. Yeah, so yeah. Maybe, I mean, think about that where we're at. Like, Jets fans are like praying that their owner gets an ambassadorship overseas so that it can help their football. Like, what a time to be alive.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, Ross, appreciate it, man. Safe travels this week.
All right, thanks, guys. See ya.
There you go. That's Ross Tucker, our Odyssey NFL insider. Insider calls with Ross here on 96.5 The Fan are brought to you by Hellman's Real Mayonnaise. Mayo game day. Be delicious. We will talk about the Jets because there has been some interesting reporting in the last 24 hours or so. We'll get to that in a second.
Yeah, it's interesting.
But I mentioned this right before Ross came on with us, which is I think there's some hope and maybe some light at the end of the tunnel for one Chiefs player's return. And we'll hear from Andy Reid and Mahomes coming up in an hour. And maybe
it's not even cryptic tweet season.
Yeah, so Hollywood Brown, if you're on social media yesterday afternoon, I think it was in a 1 o'clock hour of our show maybe, there was a tweet. It was pretty simple. It was just like, you know, a clock, right? Clock presumably ticking down. Time is ticking kind of thing. That's how most people took it.
Yes.
As in Hollywood Brown's return is soon. I took it as, oh, this 21-day practice window is opening up. Now, I don't know if it's today, Cody, or next week, but you start looking at the timeline. Okay, 21-day window opens up, so that's another 3 weeks. Doesn't have to be his return in 3 weeks. Could be less, could be another week after that. It's already week 12. It kind of fits the idea of, oh, maybe he's coming back week 15.
That seems earlier than my original assumption. Anyone else? I thought maybe the playoffs.
That's what I thought. First round of the playoffs.
Yeah, that's kind of what I thought originally. But
how nice would it be to be able to ease him in week 15 and 16 and 17? You know what I mean? Like, that would be awesome if that's really where this is trending.
I actually think it's crazy important. If it's week 1 of the playoffs, I actually don't think that we should get all that excited about the return of Hollywood Brown. I think there is just a limit to the level of involvement he can have in the offense, having played a singular preseason snap in an entire year for an offense that is still trying to find itself. I would be stunned if they were able to do that as a result of that, I would say. But if he comes back like week 14 or 15, maybe he could just be Xavier worthy, but knows where the sideline is. You know, like, I mean, look, offering some of those same routes, but
I think so.
With a better sense of like being able to navigate
that. I think that's a possibility. I also wonder, is we heard Mahomes praise the route running ability all offseason of Hollywood Brown. Like, that was the one thing that surprised him most, he said, about Hollywood Brown. Everybody talked about his deep threat ability, but what surprised Mahomes the most during Pat camp and everything else was he's a way better route runner, basically, than what I realized. I'm paraphrasing, but that's basically what Mahomes said. And it makes me wonder, now that Rashee Rice, like when those comments were made, Rashee Rice was already going to handle the underneath stuff. So it makes me wonder, is there a chance that not only deep threat, but could Hollywood Brown do some of what Rashee Rice was going to do underneath? And I understand DeAndre Hopkins is on this team now as well, so that changes the roster on top of it. But if he's suddenly around in December, by the time they have that three-game stretch of Cleveland, Houston, Pittsburgh, and I'm not saying he's going to get 70% of the snaps, not at all, but if he's getting 30 to 40% of the snaps for a couple weeks before the playoffs, he can get himself comfortable again.
Yeah, and this offense have like a role.
Work on some timing and that they're good to go come playoff time. This could be a huge thing. So we'll see. Like, nobody's saying that he's playing in the next 2 weeks or anything.
I don't hear from Andy today.
But could the window open up like today? I don't think that's crazy, and definitely don't think it's crazy next week. Just remember the timing. I mean, they're going to play Carolina Sunday, and then next week they're going to play the Raiders. Could he be back by the Chargers Sunday night football game? That might be a little much, but that's 3 weeks from now, or I guess 2 weeks from this Sunday, but 2.5 weeks or so from now. I think all of that is in play to have some role by the time they get to week 16, week 15.
Again, the earlier, the more likely I am to come here and tell you this is the difference between why they lose the Bills game or win the Bills game, or you, because they're close enough to even the top-level teams in the league, even if for some reason you don't think they're as good as Detroit or as good as Buffalo, even if you're on that stance. I'm not there, but if you are. Or, like, you need one little X factor to make a difference in a playoff game. A playoff wide receiver unit of DeAndre Hopkins, Hollywood Brown, and Xavier Worthy to go with Justin Watson and some of these other, and Juju Smith, these other complementary pieces that come after it. That works. No, it's not a top wide receiver unit in the NFL, but it's at least as good as a lot of the other teams you'd face in the playoffs, including the Ravens and the Chargers and the Bills and some of these other teams. It is comparable to those teams all of a sudden. And it's just like, to have that ability, if he really does open his practice window soon, then yeah, he gave me a little bit of hope. I read into the alarm clock. I'm the sucker, I guess. And I don't know.
Oh, it wasn't just a random, I'm going to feel like tweeting out a clock kind of thing. I think, you know what I mean? Like,
every once in a while, like, Chris Jones admitted once that he likes sending out like cryptic nonsense because he just thinks it's funny to see what people read into it.
That's his personality, though.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, that's the last he said. He had not tweeted in like, you know, he had not sent stuff multiple times. And then all of a sudden he just sent it.
Here's the context of it, too. So that tweet is sent 21 hours ago, Hollywood Brown, simply a clock. That's it. No other comment. Then I don't know if you were on social media this past weekend, on Instagram, Hollywood Brown had a story with a doctor, and the doctor was holding up a signed Hollywood Brown jersey, and Hollywood Brown was thanking him. Now, pure speculation, but it seems like things are getting things are getting towards the end of the recovery process. And so putting two and two together, I think there's a chance this practice window opens up very, very soon for Hollywood
Brown.
He's
immediately the second best wide receiver on the roster if he's healthy and playing well.
You know, the video of the McMahon, like the series of like reactions.
Yeah.
As you're talking, Cody's like looking.
Oh,
he's like, hang on a second. Yep. Hang on. As soon as it's announced Hollywood Brown is practicing, you're going to fall off ass backwards over your chair because you're thrilled that Hollywood Brown could be back soon.
It's like we could have a whole separate conversation of what we think Xavier Worthy's peak is, because I still think his ceiling is very high in this league. But as it sits right now, again, Hollywood Brown, if he were to play for this team 1 month from today, let's just say they opened his practice window and he played in a month. He played that Christmas Day game against the Steelers to open his season.
That'd be fun.
He is immediately the second best wide receiver on this roster, is he not?
Yes.
And you know me, I was never like trying to sell the world on Hollywood Brown, but just do the math on where players are at their career level, at their ability level, as it sits right now. He is immediately the second best wide receiver in the roster and a more effectively consistent deep threat than Xavier Worthy, because Xavier Worthy's still going through the rookie stuff. And so, yeah, I'm not going to tell you it's not nothing.
It makes him an instantly scarier offense in terms of, we have to deal with Hollywood Brown, who when he's healthy is very productive. Just in terms of what he's done
previously. Guys deep, and then making you choose.
There's that, and just you know, if it's true that the route running ability is something we underestimate, if that's true about Hollywood Brown, well, then that would make you even more excited, I think, about this. And, you know, going back to what you asked Ross about, you know, what do you hold back in a regular season game? Well, you obviously would take on either, you know, Buffalo or Baltimore or Pittsburgh in the playoffs. Maybe by Pittsburgh, they get to see Hollywood Brown, but otherwise it's another player that was not even involved at all in your game plan when you have to play. If you play the uh-huh. the Chargers again in the playoffs, you know, he probably wouldn't have played in either of those matchups. If you play the Ravens, obviously he wouldn't have played in the first matchup. I just, there's some elements to that also you kind of like.
I wonder too, because it wasn't it's not a leg problem. Like Pacheco's got the leg issue. Mm-hmm. It was the sternum problem.
He should be able to be running.
His legs are going to be very fresh, and there's not going to be any hesitancy. I wouldn't think to just unleash in terms of speed, routes, everything.
He's going to have
hesitation.
A full recovery. Nobody's worried about, is he going to be the same type of player? No, he's going to be the same type of player. The only question will be timing and that kind of stuff, which is why it would be important, as we said, if he gets back a couple weeks before the playoffs, because then you can maybe get the timing stuff
figured
out.
Everybody else is tired, as we get to the postseason. Yeah. He's coming off fresh. Yeah.
Over on YouTube, Stidham was pointing out the same thing. It's like the Rashee Rice rats, the thing that they miss in this offense right now is not just the over the middle, it's the run after catch.
Yeah, yak.
That was actually Hollywood's strength.
Or Rice.
But the Hollywood strength, too. Like, he was good at that during his time, and that's where do they have that in their offense? You see a lot of catch and run?
Should be worthy,
but they
can't get the spacing proper.
Honest to God, I don't think I had thought about it in that capacity. That might be the single thing I think might be missing from their offense the most in Rashee Rice's absence. Where are they in yak yardage as a team? Because it doesn't seem very good. Seems like Travis Kelce catches the ball, goes down. DeAndre Hopkins catches the ball, goes down. Juju catches the ball, goes down. Noah Gray catch. Like, there isn't a lot of movement after the catch. Hollywood could definitively help them in that area.
So we'll see what Andy says. I'm hoping he'll be asked about it when we carry his press conference around 11:45 here on 96.5 The Fan. If someone asks, hey, how is Hollywood Brown progressing, but is that practice window opening up in the next week or anytime soon? And based off of the tweets, I actually think there's a very good chance that is what is about to happen. All right, coming up next, we'll get to the 11 o'clock hour. We'll talk about who we do know is coming back very, very soon, maybe as soon as this weekend, and that is Aminihue and Isaiah Pacheco. But who's actually going to have the bigger impact? We'll also get to the trash of the day coming up next here on Cody and Gold.